Good morning, everyone. It's a blessing to be here this morning. I appreciate what the Lord's been doing in my life lately. He's been stretching me and helping me to grow. And I have a topic today, but let's turn to Luke 12, verses 16 through 20 first. Welcome to all the visitors. Happy to have you here with us. Luke 12, 16 through 20. And he spoke a parable unto them, saying, the ground of a certain rich man brought forth plentifully. And he thought within himself, saying, what shall I do, because I have no room where to bestow my fruits? And he said, this will I do. I will pull down my barns and build greater, and there will I bestow all my fruits and my goods. And I'll say to my soul, soul, thou hast much goods laid up for many years. Take thine ease, eat, drink, and be merry. But God said unto him, thou fool, this night thy soul shall be required of thee. Then who shall those things be which thou hast provided? Now, my topic today is on spiritual well-being. Now, you might be wondering what that verse has to do with that. We'll get into that later on. I'm breaking this down into four parts. First one, what is emotional well-being? Number two, why emotional well-being is important? Three, secular help for emotions. And four, spiritual help for emotions. The first three we'll go through rather quickly, just for a base. And the number four, spiritual help for emotions, we'll spend a little bit more time in. What is emotional well-being? I looked it up. It says this, and I think this is a good definition. And I think this is something we're all aiming for in our lives. Emotional well-being is the ability to successfully navigate life stressors, understand and accept your feelings, and maintain a balanced, positive outlook. It involves effectively managing your emotions in a constructive way rather than avoiding them, while fostering resilience and a sense of purpose. This can be broken down into five primary elements. Number one, emotional regulation. The ability to healthily cope with, adapt to, and manage distressing emotions like stress, anger, or sadness without being overwhelmed. Number two, self-awareness. Being in tune with your own thoughts and feelings. It involves recognizing what triggers your emotions and understanding your own limits. Number three, positive emotional balance. Having a generally positive emotional state. It is not the total absence of negative feelings, but rather maintaining a higher frequency of positive emotions like joy, excitement, and gratitude. Number four, sense of meaning and purpose. It's something we all need. Feeling that your life has a direction and that you have something valuable to contribute to the world. Number five, ability to pursue goals. Having the motivation and resilience to chase self-defined goals instead of being paralyzed or held back by fear and negative emotions. I think that's a very good definition of emotional well-being. Number two, our second point. I don't think we'll be here long. I don't think lunch is going to get burnt. Number two, why emotional well-being is important. The quick answer. The quick answer is our emotions have a tendency to dictate or influence our decisions for good or for bad, to inspire or hinder. Emotions can act as spiritual fuel or mental roadblocks. From a Christian perspective, emotional health allows you to offer genuine, undivided love without being hindered by unresolved trauma or unmanaged emotional pain. That unmanaged emotional pain seems to dictate some of our, when we talk to people, we allow our pain and we transfer to the next person, our experience that's unresolved to the next person. Emotional strength helps you to bear one another's burdens with strength and grace instead of emotional burnout and reactivity. There's also the stewardship of the physical and spiritual part of man. Mind, spirit, and body are all interconnected. The health of one affects the health of the others, for good or for bad. Number three, as you can see, I'm going through this rather quickly. Secular help for emotions. Situation selection, number one. This is all from the computer, this one, so these big words aren't from me. Situation selection. This involves choosing which situation you enter or avoid to control what emotions you experience. Example, intentional leaving a toxic job or deciding not to attend a social gathering where you know you will encounter a difficult person. So you just avoid, avoidance. Not sure if that's a good way of dealing with things, but hey. Situation modification. Once you're in a situation, you alter the physical or social environment itself to change its emotional impact. Example, moving a breakable object out of a child's reach. I think about, I used to visit my mom quite a bit, and she had a coffee table, and she had all of her stuff there, all nice and neat. Well, maybe not neat, but it's the way she liked it there. And as a young lad, well, even as an old lad, I'd come over and I'd look at and I'd say, Mom, that's a bit messy, and I'd start pretending to clean it up. And I'd get an emotional reaction. Don't you touch, get away from that. And I'd get emotional reaction. I was changing the situation for an emotional reaction. This one was for my pleasure. It didn't bring pleasure to my mom, and it's probably not a good example here, but it is one where the situation modification. Number three, attentional deployment. This is the act of shifting your focus or directing your attention within a given situation to either heighten or diminish certain emotional triggers. Example, you're at the dentist, you're at some place. I had a sty in either my right or left eye, and I went to they had to get it removed, so I went to the doctor's office, and they put the cloth over your eye, and there's this hole there, and he's like, don't move, and he takes the needle, and he has to, you know, numb the eye. Then he takes the clips, and he pulls your eye this way and that, this way. Then he's like, really don't move this time. And he takes the scalpel, and to distract, you just count tiles. So you're not thinking about what he's doing. You're just kind of looking around, thinking as, you know, he's sitting there digging away. So that is attentional deployment. Cognitive change, number four. You change the meaning you assign to a situation in order to alter its emotional significance. Example, realizing a sudden layoff is an opportunity to change careers rather than a personal failure. Here, personal story for me. So I get married, thumbs up, emotional high. We buy a place, whatnot, whatnot. And then mural contractors, they'll be working here in town sometime. Anyway, so I'm working for them. And they had 48 employees, and a big job ends. Bunch of layoffs. Another job ends. More layoffs. Another job ends. More layoffs. And there's about 12 of us left. I've been there for about 2.5 years, and I'm the youngest person on the crew. I've been there the least amount of time. And I knew I was going to be on the chopping block. So I asked my foreman, Scott Gibson. I'm like, Scott, do you think I'm going to get cut? And he's like, yep, I think you're going to get cut next. I was like, oh. And so I got cut. And so Friday I was working for Mural. The stucco guys were slow on the job and they needed more manpower. So Monday I was on the same job. And thus I was back in stucco and the rest. Not sure if that was a good thing, but I'm still in it. But I went to Vern, and I asked Vern Muro. I'm like, Vern, why? Why was I laid off? He's like, Russell, you're a good worker and whatnot, and you come. And I was like, Vern, I know that. I know I'm a good worker. I was an intentionally good worker. When I walked, I would make sure I would walk fast. If I had to do something, I made sure I worked. I made an intentional thing to whatever I did. I glorified God. But that didn't stop me from getting laid off. Why was I getting laid off? And I'm like, Vern, just tell me, why am I getting laid off? He's like, no, you're a good worker. And I'm like, Vern, you're giving me a generic answer. I don't want that. Just tell me why I'm getting laid off. He's like, you want to know why you're getting laid off, Russell? He goes, you are a good worker. You sit there, you get to work, you sit there, you work hard. You know, 3 o'clock, your pouch is off, done. That's it. That's all that what the company cares, like, that's all what you care about the company. You do your 8 hours, that's it. You don't try to improve yourself. You don't try to go farther ahead. There's other people that are taking extra courses and whatnot. You need to apply yourself more. That's why you're getting laid off and the others aren't. He goes, you're not applying yourself as much as other people. I was like, good. I learned something from there. So I didn't look at it as being laid off from a job that I wanted to keep. I was able to learn something from it. So it, instead of it being an emotional downer, it was an emotional gain for me. And that emotional gain, that gain has always been with me since that day. Response modulation. After the emotion, that's number five. After the emotion has begun, you use physiological means to help. Example, something emotional, like you've gotten to the situation, your emotions are rising. This is secular. So you start taking deep breaths. You force a smile. And you have your stress ball in your pocket and you start squeezing it. That's the way of dealing with your stressful situations, your bad emotions once they come up. So that's the secular way of dealing with your emotions. Number four, and this we'll get into a little bit more in detail now. Spiritual help for emotions. I'm going to start off with some of the lesser ones and then work my way through that. The number one, well, number one, not the number one thing. Well, I'll go, this one was good. I got a letter in the mail. And I'm not sure if some of you remembered or remember, we had somebody stalking us a couple of years back, and they, it was kind of painful. Like, you know where we live, well, maybe not all of you know where we live, but we live right beside a graveyard, and like at 5 in the morning, he'd be sitting there, parked there, watching our house. And then at 11 o'clock at night, he'd still be there, sitting there up on the hill a bit, watching our house. And he was infatuated with one of our family members. And he was determined that this, like, God had shown him this. And that was, it was emotional for me. Now, that I'm going to just kind of stray a little bit here. So for me, the emotions were, I love this man. I want the best for his soul. But then he starts getting a little bit more out there, out into space. And then you start worrying, not worrying, you're concerned. You're concerned about the health, the welfare of your family members, all of them. And you think, and then all of a sudden your mind starts going, how about if he comes in the house in the middle of the night? And then all of a sudden those emotions rise up, that it, you know, the adrenaline glands start kicking in. And then you, those emotions have to be brought under your mind, and you have to sit there and think, no, I'm going to pray for this young man. I'm going to pray. I'm going to keep a good attitude. Anyways, he wrote me a letter just recently, and I'll read you that letter. Dear Russell and Julie, I haven't heard from you in a while. Wonder why. I hope you're flourishing in the Lord. Feel free to write to me if you care to. I've been blessed with a place to live and paying work to do here in a certain state far away. I'm still hoping for more improvement in my health and glad for the improvement so far. I was blessed to be introduced to a Christian bookstore not far from here recently. I'm sorry for all the misunderstandings in the past, and I realize now that I had some unrealistic thinking earlier when I was out west and coming off medication and under a lot of stress. More recently, I've done more fasting, as I remember you recommending. I did a genetic test revealing some mutations, and the lab company also has specific nutrition mixes that they recommend to each person who does their test according to the individual genetic makeup. I joined a nationwide fellowship church here and plan to follow the Lord's leading. Here are a few scriptures you may consider. Blessed are they that keep his testimonies and that seek him with their whole heart. They had almost consumed me upon earth, but I forsook not thy precepts. Forever, O Lord, thy word is settled in heaven. Thy faithfulness is unto all generations. Thou hast established the earth, and it abideth. Great peace have they which love thy law, and nothing shall offend them. Let us therefore follow after the things which make for peace, and things wherewith one may edify one another. He got his mind back. He didn't have to get medicated. He stayed off. And during that tough time, he turned to the Lord. He took the things. This type cometh not out, but by prayer and fasting. As his mind was going one way, the Lord was saying, come this way. And he finally got to the place where he's like, I need to go that way. And he went that way, and he's getting the help that he needs. So part of that was by fasting, diet, healthy hobbies. Healthy hobbies help. It says, I looked up a statistic, a healthy hobby is one. Every successful person has a healthy hobby, whatever that may be. A good healthy hobby is reading and collecting books. That's a very good healthy hobby. There's a lot of other healthy hobbies that you can take up that's beneficial for your emotional and spiritual strength. I read a book when I was younger that helped me out enormously. It's called The Disciplined Life. It was written in 1962 by Richard Shelley Taylor. One part of the book, feelings, and this is the part that helped me a lot because I was dealing with something. Okay, when you come off of drugs or whatever, your emotions just, they're just not right. They go up and down. They're all over the place. You don't know if you want to sit there and end your life or live your life. They are just horrible. And it's a roller coaster ride, and you don't feel like being on it. But you're stuck on that ride, and it just goes up and down, up and down. And I read this thing in The Disciplined Life that says, feelings must not be spared, no quarter given here. The Christian must not tolerate the least vestige of the philosophy of impotence. I can't help it. Emotions may not obey the will, but actions must. And so that scripture that Peter brought out, bring every thought to that captivity of Christ, there was one thought that was just bringing me down all the time. And for about 2 years, I sat there disciplined. Every time that thought came into my head, every single time, there is not one time that thought got through inside my brain. I brought it to the captivity of Christ. It didn't slip by once. And finally, I got released from it. And it felt good. And I've never had to deal with that situation since that day. And that was in my mid-20s. And that has been a blessing to my soul. Anyway, so I got a story for that one. I just told you a story, but I got another story for you. So I was thinking about that. And the mind, we're talking about the soul a little bit today in Sunday school. What makes up the soul? The mind, the will, the emotions. So you have your mind, your thought life. And then you have your emotions, your feelings. So your mind, your thoughts, your emotions, your feelings, and your will to decide how you're going to deal with that. And I thought about somebody that I went to school with. Grade 12 was a long time ago. And I went to school with him in the 80s, and I seen a news clip with him, and I felt so bad for him, and I never did get a hold of him. But then I thought, I'm going to try to get a hold of him. So I tried to get a hold of him, but I couldn't. But I looked it up on YouTube, and I found it, and I found a little write-up. And I will get a hold of him now and talk to him. Anyways, his name's Paul McCallum. He's a Hall of Famer, CFL football player, and he was playing for the Saskatchewan Rough Riders. And he was in the Western Finals. It was in overtime. So overtime, for one of the biggest games for them to go to the Grey Cup. Saskatchewan, I'm sure all of you have been through Saskatchewan. It really has nothing to offer. So if you have a football team that's doing good, they want it to do good. They'll hold on to anything, grasp at anything. So anyways, simple field goal, 18 yards. I can kick an 18-yard field goal probably right now. Some of you might doubt that I could kick an 18-yard field goal at this moment. You might be right. I might not be able to. But I think I could. It's so easy. I think I could do it. He's a professional kicker in the CFL. It's overtime. They snap the ball. Simple kick. Boom. He kicks it. And he misses. He falls on the ground, crumbles, and he's lying there. His teammates don't even offer him a hand up. They just walk past him. He's there on the ground, just with his hands to his head, and he's lost the biggest game of the year for his team. He got death threats. He got his house pelted with eggs. A farmer came up and dumped a load of manure on his place, on his front yard. He got death threats, and he was upset. His family was getting in turmoil, and he got into his car, and he's from Surrey, a good Surrey boy. He did good, though. It's like he was a good young man. Like he was a good young man. But he took a baseball bat, because they found out one of the people that did it, and he was going to teach them a lesson, a good old-fashioned lesson. And he got into his vehicle because his career was ruined. It was done. So he's just going to teach them a lesson. He felt like that he was going to sit. He felt like people would support him in this. And he was just going to smash up this person's place, smash their car, do everything. And he was there and he got a phone call. And somebody said, "Paul, I don't think that's a good idea. I think that's a stupid idea." And Paul reconsidered it. So his emotions went this way, in a negative way. His mind had a choice. His thought process was saying, smash this. His emotions were saying, yeah, let's do this. Reason sat there and said, no. He listened to the right voice. He's a Hall of Famer now. He went on to kick the longest field goal in CFL history, 62 yards. He went 100 field goals straight. He's one of the best kickers in CFL history. He's a Hall of Famer. He's won numerous awards, and he actually won with a field goal kick the game the next year for the team that he got traded to. Saskatchewan didn't keep him. And he won that. He had a choice to make. And he didn't listen to the negative, he listened to the positive. And each one of us has to listen to that positive. But there's more to this story with emotions. Let's see here. Okay. Understanding underlying issues. I read a thing about Oprah Winfrey. She was a talk show host, one of the most successful talk show hosts around, I guess. I didn't really listen to her a whole lot, but she was on TV. And she was she had a lot of extra weight on her. And she dieted. She did like 12 different diets and whatnot. But she always gained back the weight. Always gained back. And so she went to this person, Bob Green or something, whatever his name was. And he said, "You got to figure out why you're eating." And she did an internal review of herself. And she put it this way. Oprah said, "For me, food was comfort, pleasure, love, a friend, everything. So whenever she got into an emotional, distressful thing, food was what she turned to. She always turned to that food. She turned to it. So whenever she wasn't feeling good emotionally, that's where she turned. And she hated it because of the results of it. It didn't give her what she wanted. So she had to work through that. And she said, "I consciously work every day at not letting food be a sub for my emotions. Here's one that we should all pay attention to. Deep-seated feelings of unworthiness. Deep-seated feelings of unworthiness. When something happens, I deserve it. I deserve this. I'm a worthless person. I feel worthless. I feel like a piece of dung. I don't feel like nobody loves, like it. I'm worthless. And then when success happens or is about to happen, it conflicts with how you've always felt about yourself, and you sabotage yourself. When I first got saved, I was at a street mission, and this young, another Frenchman, Morris Hall, very handsome young man when he was straight, dark hair, just nice and wavy, deep blue eyes, and he had lots going for him. Healthy young man, but he just couldn't succeed. And I asked him, I'm like, we talked and whatnot, and he came to the Conservative Church a year before me. And he sabotaged himself. Like, I watched him sabotage himself. And I'm like, before he went to the Conservative movement, I'm like, so, like, you know, you talk and you get to know one another. And he always said, his mom said that he was stupid, and you'll never amount to anything. He listened to that voice. He felt worthless. And so he comes to the Conservative Church, and the pastor and his wife take him in. And he gets fed, and everything's going good for him. When I came to the Conservative Church, they thought I liked Julie. I lived in a walk-in closet with a little light bulb. Nothing was given to me. But my mom always said, Russell, you could be the Prime Minister of Canada if you wanted to be. She goes, I have full confidence in you. And she filled me with that through my lifetime. No matter what I did, she never gave up on me. So I hope you all vote for me someday. No, I'm just joking. But underlying issues, we all have to look at it. We all have to examine ourselves to see what those are. Misconceptions. Misconceptions are a big thing. This was interesting for me. I had a couple come over that had left Eastern. I'm not going to mention any names, but they left Eastern, and they were visiting with us, and we were great friends before. We were great friends. And they'd come over all the time, put the coffee on, and we'd sit there, laugh, we'd joke and everything. Now it's different. I'm like, why is it different? And he always looks at me suspicious. And there's a distance. You know when you feel that distance with somebody? I'm like, why is there a distance? I'm like, hey, I'm not going to say Sam. I'm like what's... And I couldn't figure out why that distance. And then I talked to a good brother, and I'm like, I don't understand this. And I was racking my mind, and I was asking them questions, this couple, and I was trying to probe. I probed so much that she broke out in tears, and I was like, oh, I don't care, because I'm not sitting there I'm just trying to figure this out. And I told them I'm trying to figure it out, and this brother told me, it's like, they come from Eastern. When you leave Eastern, you're labeled, and you're looked down upon, and they don't want to feel that way. And I'm like, so there's a misconception. Their thought process is wrong on how I'm viewing them. Their thoughts are making their emotions and everything, they're making a judgment on me because of a misconception. And they're looking at me in a wrong way. I was like, well, that's an interesting thing, and that made sense. And then I looked at that, and I was like, you know, sometimes when something happens traumatic, you feel spiritually or emotionally starved. And I thought about it, why some people, when they leave the Conservative movement, they go so liberal. It's because and this is just a guess on my part. This isn't a scientific thing. But I thought about it, and it's like, so you leave a conservative movement, your emotions, you feel everybody's against you, you feel like you're looked down upon, you feel like you're shunned, you feel your emotions are going all over the place. Then you go to that community church, and they're all peppy and happy, and they don't have a care in the world, they don't have no standards, and they reach out to you, and they smile with you, and they shake your hand, and they bring you in, and that emotional need, all of a sudden, is getting met to a certain degree. And that's good. That's good. But it leaves out one important thing. It's like that emotional need is sitting there. You're overriding what God really wants. Stanchion, you're not turning to God. You're sitting there trying to fill an emotional need, an emotional void, with something that is partially good. And I was like, I think that's an interesting thing. I'm not sure if you're following that, but I think the emotional well-being of people is the very, very important thing. Anyways, let's get into one of the last parts here. Oh, okay, so with that, okay, spiritual help for emotions. I was driving, been working out there in Invermere, and so it's a fairly long drive. I've been going sometimes to the coast and whatnot, so lots of time to the coast, lots of times to think. And when I was driving, I was thinking and preparing for street meetings, trying to get my mind in on it. It's a few months away, but I like to sit there, get geared up for that right away. And I was listening to West Huff, and a thing, giving a reason for your faith. So that was the title of the broadcast, podcast or whatever. Giving a reason for your faith. And somebody asks you, somebody says to you, it's irrational to believe in God. It's irrational to believe in God. And you say, no, it's rational to believe in God. And so you argue for God's cause, but at the same time, you could be damaging the cause because you haven't got them to define who they think God is, what his character is. They think he's that sadistic person that lets things happen to you, to this world, and they don't see any rational reason to follow a God that's sadistic, that's hateful, and allows evil to happen upon people. And so you have to redefine who God is to them. Now let's put that in the emotional sense. Turn to God. You're going through a really tough time. But I interviewed a couple of people. A friend of mine, he's from the Middle East, he's from Egypt, and there was a suicide, and him and I got thrown together in this thing, and we got to know each other through it. And from that time, his life just fell right apart. And I was like, how did you deal with it? How did you feel towards God? He's like, I was bitter. I was bitter. God, you got me into this. I thought God was a monster. I was like, how could God do this to me? And then I talked to another man that something really bad happened to, and he said the same thing. Exactly. And so they're going through this emotional thing where they're even thinking about ending their lives. And I was like, so what changed for you? And the one said that, he goes, 1 Corinthians 13. There's no temptation such as common to man that God won't make a way of escape. He goes, instead of going away from God, I went towards him. And when I went towards him and trusted him a little bit more and a little bit more, he came and he grabbed me and he held on to me. And he started helping me in my emotions. and I talk to that man, and I know he's gotten help. And my other friend, he's like, absolutely. It was the best thing that has ever happened to me. He's like, if it wasn't for the process, I'd like to go through it again. He goes, I've never had a closer walk with Jesus in my life. He said, through this extreme pain and this extreme turmoil, which was immense, he goes, it brought me closer to my Maker. And he goes, I've never known God in that same way since that day. So that was the so what was I getting with that? Let's go to Luke 12, and let's read that scripture again. We'll get to that one now. Luke 12. And I'll wrap it up shortly here. We'll start at 15. We'll go back to 20, maybe a bit more. And he said unto them, take heed, and beware of covetousness, for a man's life consisteth not in the abundance of the things which he possesseth. And he spake a parable unto them, saying, the ground of a certain rich man brought forth plentiful. And so on, so on. Verse 20, but God said unto him, thou fool, this night thy soul shall be required of thee. Then who shall these things be which thou hast provided? So he that layeth up treasure for himself and is not, so is he that is that layeth up treasure for himself and is not rich toward God. And he said unto his disciples, therefore I say unto you, take no thought for your life, what ye shall eat, neither for the body what ye shall put on. Life is more than meat, and the body is more than raiment. And then it keeps going on. And then in verse 32, fear not, little flock, for it is your Father's good pleasure to give you the kingdom. So when we read that scripture to begin with, you look at it as just as riches can be a stumbling block. But it's more than that. It's God doesn't want to deal with just the surface things. He wants to deal with the deeper things in life. He wants to deal with your soul. He wants to bring you home to him. He wants you to sit there and understand. There's his love for you. There's a few scriptures, Romans 5, verse 8, Jeremiah 3, verse 3, Zephaniah 3, verse 17, Isaiah 61, verse 3, he'll give you beauty for ashes. Psalm 30, verse 5, weeping may endure for a night, but joy cometh in the morning. John 3:16, for God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son. So all these things are there to sit there, draw you into a deeper, closer walk with him. How does that work? John Eccles, a neurologist, a Nobel Peace Prize winner, he said, the mind to the brain is like the piano player to the piano. The mind to the brain. So the brain is just the piano, and the mind is the piano player. The piano, and if it's out of tune, the piano isn't useless. It's just out of tune. It needs somebody to tune it up. And so when we have to look at the deeper meaning of our problems, of the things that we go through, and know that God is trying to draw you closer to the tuner and to get you the help that you need. John 4, verse 6. It's a very important scripture. It's the lady at the well. The one part that's important, it says the sixth hour. It's the sixth hour that she's there. The sixth hour is the hottest part of the day. She's there by herself. How many times has she been married? Five times. She's with her sixth boyfriend or husband, whatever. And she's there by herself. Why is she there by herself? Because she's shunned. She's worthless. She feels worthless. She's going to get talked about. She's not somebody anybody wants to be around. She feels like she doesn't feel good about herself. God reaches out to her. God is there. And Jesus was number seven. Jesus was that perfect number. He completed her. She got a new husband. That seventh one was the one that completed her, that gave her something that she really needed. He reached out to her. Orthodox tradition, she was a bold missionary, suffered many tortures, and was martyred under Nero. That changed her life. It gave her something to live for. It completed her. Just like all of us need that. Number 7, touch of the master's hand. We talk about being out of tune and that we're broken. It's always been a favorite one of mine. 'Twas battered and scarred, and the auctioneer thought it's scarcely worth his while to waste much time on the old violin. But he held it up with a smile. What am I bidding, good folk, he cried. Who'll start the bidding for me? $1? $1? Then two? Only two? $2? And who'll make it 3? Going for 3, but no. From the room far back, a gray-haired man came forward and picked up the bow, then wiping the dust from the old violin and tightening the loosened strings, he played a melody pure and sweet as the caroling angel sings. The music ceased, and the auctioneer, with a voice that was quiet and low, said, now, what am I bid for the old violin? And he held it up with the bow, $1,000. Who'll make it 2? 2,000. And who'll make it 3? 3,000 once, 3,000 twice, and going and gone, cried he. The people cheered, and some of them cried, we do not understand what changed its worth. Quick came the reply, the touch of the master's hand. And many a man with life out of tune and battered and scarred with sin is auctioned cheap to a thoughtless crowd, much like the old violin, a mess of pottage, a glass of wine, a game, and he travels on. He's going once and going twice. He's going and almost gone. But the master comes, and the foolish crowd never can quite understand the worth of his soul and the change that's wrought by the touch of the master's hand. So the touch of the master's hand can tune us back to where we need to be, each and every one. And I have one more story. There's two men in my life, Vance Cohen and Danny Lane. Vance Cohen jumped off a bridge when he was younger. He was a wrestler for Canada. He got a gold medal in Pan Am Games. He became a chiropractor at age 24. Athletic, strong, smart, and life had no meaning. And he went to that bridge, and he jumped 13 stories, and he landed on the footer down below, busted his back in 3 places, and he never walked again. I remember I don't remember this part because I didn't know him at that time. But when he was in the hospital, somebody told him the gospel and what Jesus can do for the soul. And all of a sudden he grasped onto that, and he knew he wanted to help street people. So the Lord told him to start up a house. When somebody handed me a tract, they sent me to him, to that man that had jumped off a bridge, that sat there and looked, an athlete, a world-class athlete, looking at his legs, all skinny now, never being able to use them again. And he was one that was able to help me. Danny Lane, he's the one that brought me to the conservative movement. He's the one that helped me through some tough times. He sat there, he tried to commit suicide. He was going to cut both of his wrists. He cut one so bad he couldn't even cut the other one. He ended up in the hospital. He was a drug addict for 19 years. He had no veins left. He was brutalized. He did things. He felt he was just a skinnied out little drug addict. And God touched him. Now those two men, they went towards the master's hand. They were out of tune, and God tuned them up. Tuned them up enough to where they knew what it was like to go through those tough times. And I needed that. I needed that person that has gone through the fire to help me. And God might need you to be able to go through the fire to help somebody else that's gone through those tough times. So when you're going through those tough times and the master comes, knocks on your door, don't turn that way. Don't go with the bitterness. There's only one way you can go. That's to the one that can tune you back to perfection, the one that can make you sing a good song, the one that can make you complete again. and help you in those emotional turmoils that you're going through. And he can guide you through it. And when he's guided you through it, you can be there for somebody else and help them through their tough times. There is a purpose to the pain. How does it go? Weeping may endure for a night, but joy cometh in the morning. Weeping may endure for a night, but joy cometh in the morning. So let's remember that God has a plan for each one of us. Don't be bitter. Don't feel like you're worthless. God's bringing you through that so he can help you and draw you closer to him so you can be complete. That out-of-tuneness that you've been dealing with can be put back into tune, and that you can live the life that he wants you to live. So Lord bless each one of you as you go through your trials and tribulations. Make sure you turn to the one that can help you get through. Make sure you get touched by the Master's hand. Lord bless each one. Thank you.